Cambridge Assessment, International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, English as a Second Language, Paper 2, Listening. Exercise 1. You will hear 8 short recordings. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. Where would the woman most like to live?
Are you happy living in the city?
Well, in a way, I've got things I need nearby. The noise isn't always easy to deal with, though, especially at night. Somewhere near water would suit me better, I think.
I'd love to be by a lake. Or maybe up in the hills.
Well, among hills would be okay. And a lake sounds lovely. But what you don't get there is the sound of waves, like you do by the sea, which I really love listening to. Much nicer than city streets.
Agreed. Are you happy living in the city?
Well, in a way, I've got things I need nearby. The noise isn't always easy to deal with, though, especially at night. Somewhere near water would suit me better, I think.
I'd love to be by a lake. Or maybe up in the hills.
Well, among hills would be okay. And a lake sounds lovely. But what you don't get there is the sound of waves, like you do by the sea, which I really love listening to. Much nicer than city streets.
Agreed.
Question 2. What does the science teacher want her class to do now?
Right, everyone, let's think about what we've done so far. I hope you've all got some interesting results from the experiment you've been working on. You've used the equipment that was set up on your bench ready for you to start work when you arrived. And well done for remembering to put on the safety glasses before you began. So we've got to the point where you need to type up your handwritten notes that you made during the experiment. Okay, let's get started, shall we? Right, everyone, let's think about what we've done so far. I hope you've all got some interesting results from the experiment you've been working on. You've used the equipment that was set up on your bench ready for you to start work when you arrived. And well done for remembering to put on the safety glasses before you began. So we've got to the point where you need to type up your handwritten notes that you made during the experiment. Okay, let's get started, shall we?
Question 3. What do the man and his daughter decide to have for lunch?
Are you getting hungry? I am. Let's find somewhere for lunch, shall we? What do you fancy?
Well, there are plenty of places to choose from. We could get a sandwich, but something hot would be nice, like a burger. We had that last night, though, didn't we?
There's a restaurant nearby where you can get really nice curry. I've been there before. Or we could have pizza, your favourite.
Well, yes. It'd be nice to have something different, though. So let's go to the place you recommended.
That sounds perfect. Are you getting hungry? I am. Let's find somewhere for lunch, shall we? What do you fancy?
Well, there are plenty of places to choose from. We could get a sandwich, but something hot would be nice, like a burger. We had that last night, though, didn't we?
There's a restaurant nearby where you can get really nice curry. I've been there before. Or we could have pizza, your favourite.
Well, yes. It'd be nice to have something different, though. So let's go to the place you recommended.
That sounds perfect.
Question 4. What will the man do to improve his fitness?
How's your exercise schedule going?
Okay, but I need to do more if I want to get fitter. I went running with a colleague yesterday and struggled to keep up with him. Somebody suggested I should try getting fit by lifting those heavy weights at the gym. I'm not sure I'd enjoy that, though. Or I could go swimming again, but I injured my shoulder doing that. The only other sport I enjoy is golf, so I'm going to start playing again.
Will that make you fitter?
Well, it does take a lot of energy.
How's your exercise schedule going?
Okay, but I need to do more if I want to get fitter. I went running with a colleague yesterday and struggled to keep up with him. Somebody suggested I should try getting fit by lifting those heavy weights at the gym. I'm not sure I'd enjoy that, though. Or I could go swimming again, but I injured my shoulder doing that. The only other sport I enjoy is golf, so I'm going to start playing again.
Will that make you fitter?
Well, it does take a lot of energy.
Question 5. Which is the woman's favorite room in her new home?
How's the new apartment?
It's more spacious than our old one. The kitchen's bigger and the living room's a lovely place to relax with lots of bright sunshine. When I can, though, I head for my study. I work from home and it's got everything I need. It's the only room with a window facing the road and I can see people passing by, so I prefer it to all the others. The dining room's nice too, a big table where we can chat to family and friends over dinner, but it's not quite as good.
How's the new apartment?
It's more spacious than our old one. The kitchen's bigger and the living room's a lovely place to relax with lots of bright sunshine. When I can, though, I head for my study. I work from home and it's got everything I need. It's the only room with a window facing the road and I can see people passing by, so I prefer it to all the others. The dining room's nice too, a big table where we can chat to family and friends over dinner, but it's not quite as good.
Question 6. Who will give a talk to the art students tomorrow?
Now, everyone, someone's coming to give you a talk tomorrow instead of your usual painting class. Remember, we had a similar talk recently by an artist explaining how to make sculptures. Well, this time, it'll be someone who makes beautiful pots on a special wheel using a material called clay. And then you can try making your own in the studio upstairs. So you'll learn all about this way of creating art, and it doesn't matter how good your drawing skills are, which I know many of you worry about. Enjoy! Now, everyone, someone's coming to give you a talk tomorrow instead of your usual painting class. Remember, we had a similar talk recently by an artist explaining how to make sculptures. Well, this time, it'll be someone who makes beautiful pots on a special wheel using a material called clay. And then you can try making your own in the studio upstairs. So you'll learn all about this way of creating art, and it doesn't matter how good your drawing skills are, which I know many of you worry about. Enjoy!
Question 7. What did both friends watch on TV last night?
There's been so much about space on TV recently, hasn't there? Like that talk about stars and planets? Then last night I wanted to watch a program about a space rocket and realized I'd seen it before. Anyway, I went for something less serious.
So, did you watch that science fiction film?
About a man who met a creature from outer space? That was cool.
It certainly kept me entertained for the evening. I'd actually intended to watch an interview with an astronaut about her experiences, but I knew I'd be too tired to concentrate.
There's been so much about space on TV recently, hasn't there? Like that talk about stars and planets? Then last night I wanted to watch a program about a space rocket and realized I'd seen it before. Anyway, I went for something less serious.
So, did you watch that science fiction film?
About a man who met a creature from outer space? That was cool.
It certainly kept me entertained for the evening. I'd actually intended to watch an interview with an astronaut about her experiences, but I knew I'd be too tired to concentrate.
Question 8. Which place in the city do both friends like?
There are some lovely places in this city. Look at that tall building, all glass and steel. I'm not usually a fan of that style of building, but that's impressive.
I suppose, although it looks too modern for this city, unlike that traditional building over there with the balconies, that's more my taste, with the plants growing over it.
Well, it is rather beautiful, I must admit. Or there's that old castle next to the market square. They're both quite attractive places.
Well, I still prefer my original choice.
I think you're right, actually. There are some lovely places in this city. Look at that tall building, all glass and steel. I'm not usually a fan of that style of building, but that's impressive.
I suppose, although it looks too modern for this city, unlike that traditional building over there with the balconies, that's more my taste, with the plants growing over it.
Well, it is rather beautiful, I must admit. Or there's that old castle next to the market square. They're both quite attractive places.
Well, I still prefer my original choice.
I think you're right, actually.
That is the end of exercise 1. Now turn to exercise 2. Exercise 2. You will hear 5 short recordings. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear each recording twice. You will hear a man talking about his garden. Now look at questions 9 and 10.
I wanted to have more colour in my garden this year, so I planted lots of flower seeds, looked after them carefully, then waited, expecting to have a beautiful garden. In fact, not much happened. I'd prepared the ground to help the seeds grow, in a place where they'd get sunshine. But there wasn't much rain, so that was the issue, I'd say. So next year, I'll pay someone who knows what they're doing to give me a hand with growing things. I mean, the carrots and peas I grew last year looked okay, but they didn't taste great. I tried using the internet to see what plants need, but it was all so confusing. It was a waste of time. I wanted to have more colour in my garden this year, so I planted lots of flower seeds, looked after them carefully, then waited, expecting to have a beautiful garden. In fact, not much happened. I'd prepared the ground to help the seeds grow, in a place where they'd get sunshine. But there wasn't much rain, so that was the issue, I'd say. So next year, I'll pay someone who knows what they're doing to give me a hand with growing things. I mean, the carrots and peas I grew last year looked okay, but they didn't taste great. I tried using the internet to see what plants need, but it was all so confusing. It was a waste of time.
You will hear a woman talking about a ride she recently went on with her cycling club. Now look at questions 11 and 12.
I went out with my cycling club recently. The bike shop had checked my bike and fixed my brakes, so I confidently set off at the front. But I soon realised the group wasn't behind me, and I didn't know where I was. By the time I'd found everyone, I was starving. Luckily, I'd taken some food with me. Anyway, I was almost too tired to complete the ride, but everyone in the club was really kind, like my cousin who offered to take me home, but I didn't want to give up. Someone I know from work said she'd sit with me while I rested, but then the woman who lives next door, a new member, said she'd cycle slowly with me. We did it together. I went out with my cycling club recently. The bike shop had checked my bike and fixed my brakes, so I confidently set off at the front. But I soon realised the group wasn't behind me, and I didn't know where I was. By the time I'd found everyone, I was starving. Luckily, I'd taken some food with me. Anyway, I was almost too tired to complete the ride, but everyone in the club was really kind, like my cousin who offered to take me home, but I didn't want to give up. Someone I know from work said she'd sit with me while I rested, but then the woman who lives next door, a new member, said she'd cycle slowly with me. We did it together.
You will hear two friends talking about the moon. Now look at questions 13 and 14.
I was looking at the moon last night. Really beautiful. I imagine sometimes it has a smiling face on it and its different stages, from a thin new moon to a round full moon, come and go so quickly. After sunset, though, when there are no clouds, everything around me looks so bright and silvery. Nothing beats that.
Well, I've actually been reading about the moon. I already knew there's lots of research being done on it, and poets throughout history have written about it too. What I found out, though, was the numbers of businessmen and so on that have expressed a desire to go there. Wouldn't be my thing.
Nor mine. I was looking at the moon last night. Really beautiful. I imagine sometimes it has a smiling face on it and its different stages, from a thin new moon to a round full moon, come and go so quickly. After sunset, though, when there are no clouds, everything around me looks so bright and silvery. Nothing beats that.
Well, I've actually been reading about the moon. I already knew there's lots of research being done on it, and poets throughout history have written about it too. What I found out, though, was the numbers of businessmen and so on that have expressed a desire to go there. Wouldn't be my thing.
Nor mine.
You will hear a man talking to a shop assistant about buying a shirt. Now look at questions 15 and 16.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I need a new shirt for a party. You've got some nice ones here.
Oh, we've had those in stock for a while now and we're selling loads of them. They're quite traditional, but they're very smart, good for a special occasion.
Okay, well, let's see. It's hard to choose, but this one's nice. I wouldn't normally wear blue. It's everywhere. But the cotton is really soft and good quality. And it's exactly the type of shirt I always go for, so I'm sure the size will be fine. But if it isn't, can I change it? I haven't got time to try it on now.
Of course. Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I need a new shirt for a party. You've got some nice ones here.
Oh, we've had those in stock for a while now and we're selling loads of them. They're quite traditional, but they're very smart, good for a special occasion.
Okay, well, let's see. It's hard to choose, but this one's nice. I wouldn't normally wear blue. It's everywhere. But the cotton is really soft and good quality. And it's exactly the type of shirt I always go for, so I'm sure the size will be fine. But if it isn't, can I change it? I haven't got time to try it on now.
Of course.
You will hear a biology lecturer talking about a species of butterfly. Now look at questions 17 and 18.
You might have heard news about people seeing a rare white butterfly. I've found the stories fascinating, especially because everyone believed the species had died out completely a few decades ago due to low temperatures. And although people did try to breed them, no one knows if they were successful. But perhaps someone did succeed and released these butterflies into the wild. Anyway, if you want to see one, have a look at a photo. You'll see it looks like a more common white butterfly, so don't confuse the two. The wing size of this rare species is different, so that should help. And you may see them around hedges called blackthorn. That's where they get the food they like most. So, any questions? You might have heard news about people seeing a rare white butterfly. I've found the stories fascinating, especially because everyone believed the species had died out completely a few decades ago due to low temperatures. And although people did try to breed them, no one knows if they were successful. But perhaps someone did succeed and released these butterflies into the wild. Anyway, if you want to see one, have a look at a photo. You'll see it looks like a more common white butterfly, so don't confuse the two. The wing size of this rare species is different, so that should help. And you may see them around hedges called blackthorn. That's where they get the food they like most. So, any questions?
That is the end of exercise 2. Now turn to exercise 3. Exercise 3. You will hear a journalist called Sophie Brooks giving a talk about flying in the US state of Alaska, her childhood home. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice. Now look at questions 19 to 26.
I'm Sophie Brooks, and I'm a journalist. I live in New York, but was brought up in Alaska. Only around 20% of this vast, wild country can be accessed by road. So flying is a vital form of transport for us. In fact, for every 70 grown-ups in Alaska, there will probably be one person among them who's a pilot. If asked, I would have guessed one person in 25, so that was a surprise. Anyway, there are 6 times more pilots than elsewhere in the U.S. I grew up with my family in Anchorage, Alaska's largest city. Over the years, we had a series of tiny single-engine planes, which we used to travel out of the city, my father at the controls. The one manufactured in the 1970s kept going for years before my parents had to change it, unlike their first one, which was built in the 1960s. In the 1980s, they acquired a luxury model, which was far too expensive to keep. I can still remember being a passenger in our plane. The views below us were always magnificent, for example, as we passed over deep blue rivers. Sometimes we even saw volcanoes in the distance. That's one sight I'll never forget. We'd also fly above dark forests, beautiful on clear days. However, flying in Alaska isn't just for pleasure. Pilots regularly deliver groceries, along with letters and parcels, to areas with few roads, like where some of my family live. They also bring prescription drugs, which my grandparents really couldn't manage without. I've become interested in the history of Alaskan pilots and their ability to fly. In the early days, they didn't have the benefit of weather forecasting, and what's especially amazing, no devices like the ones we have now to help them find their way. And they often didn't have established airports to land at, so they'd land on rough ground. So, I thought I'd write an article about Alaskan pilots. What I learned from interviews with pilots who've been flying for years was fascinating, as was talking to the flying instructors I met. Then, I interviewed pilots still learning to fly, and thought I'd focus my article on them. It's almost finished. I returned to Alaska recently and traveled in a small plane to visit a remote area, like I did as a teenager. I'd usually have a skiing trip planned or go sailing with friends. On this occasion, I joined a group for some hiking, which was something I hadn't done for years. Anyway, it was soon time to return to Anchorage City. The sky was gray and it was getting a bit windy by then. But more importantly, our plane hadn't arrived. I started to imagine what would happen if our group weren't collected from the empty countryside, a feeling I hadn't had for years. However, our wonderful pilot arrived and we set off. A happy ending.
Now you will hear the talk again.
I'm Sophie Brooks, and I'm a journalist. I live in New York, but was brought up in Alaska. Only around 20% of this vast, wild country can be accessed by road. So flying is a vital form of transport for us. In fact, for every 70 grown-ups in Alaska, there will probably be one person among them who's a pilot. If asked, I would have guessed one person in 25, so that was a surprise. Anyway, there are 6 times more pilots than elsewhere in the U.S. I grew up with my family in Anchorage, Alaska's largest city. Over the years, we had a series of tiny single-engine planes which we used to travel out of the city, my father at the controls. The one manufactured in the 1970s kept going for years before my parents had to change it, unlike their first one, which was built in the 1960s. In the 1980s, they acquired a luxury model, which was far too expensive to keep. I can still remember being a passenger in our plane. The views below us were always magnificent, for example, as we passed over deep blue rivers. Sometimes we even saw volcanoes in the distance. That's one sight I'll never forget. We'd also fly above dark forests, beautiful on clear days. However, flying in Alaska isn't just for pleasure. Pilots regularly deliver groceries, along with letters and parcels, to areas with few roads, like where some of my family live. They also bring prescription drugs, which my grandparents really couldn't manage without. I've become interested in the history of Alaskan pilots and their ability to fly. In the early days, they didn't have the benefit of weather forecasting, and what's especially amazing, no devices like the ones we have now to help them find their way. And they often didn't have established airports to land at, so they'd land on rough ground. So, I thought I'd write an article about Alaskan pilots. What I learned from interviews with pilots who've been flying for years was fascinating, as was talking to the flying instructors I met. Then I interviewed pilots still learning to fly and thought I'd focus my article on them. It's almost finished. I returned to Alaska recently and traveled in a small plane to visit a remote area, like I did as a teenager. I'd usually have a skiing trip planned or go sailing with friends. On this occasion, I joined a group for some hiking, which was something I hadn't done for years. Anyway, it was soon time to return to Anchorage City. The sky was gray, and it was getting a bit windy by then. But more importantly, our plane hadn't arrived. I started to imagine what would happen if our group weren't collected from the empty countryside, a feeling I hadn't had for years. However, our wonderful pilot arrived, and we set off. A happy ending.
That is the end of exercise 3. Now turn to exercise 4. Exercise 4. You will hear 6 people talking about what they learned on a photography course they attended. For questions 27 to 32, choose from the list A to H which idea each speaker expresses. Write the correct letter A to H on the answer line. Use each letter only once. There are 2 extra letters which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Now read statements A to H. Speaker 1.
The camera I'd bought was expensive, but even though I'd figured out how it worked, I was still disappointed with my photos. The course tutor mentioned that although I was good at photographing things like trees in the park, I'd often forget what was behind them, usually something that ruined the shot. So that's been important to remember. Anyway, at least I've always managed to get the lighting right, unlike my brother, who takes photos facing into the sun.
Speaker 2.
I wasn't sure about doing a course, but I've definitely learned a lot from the tutor, such as how to get pictures of things like birds flying past, which I've always been really into. So the course was worth it. I might have a change now, though, and try taking pictures of all the festivals and street parties that take place around my city. It's not something I really know how to do, but let's see.
Speaker 3.
I'd already taught myself how to operate my camera and had bought lots of extra kit, but I needed expert advice. I'd been experimenting with different lights and stuff, but I still wasn't happy with my photos somehow. Anyway, thanks to the tutor, I realized that I was just trying to include too much in them. My whole family on holiday, for example. I'd learned to plan where each family member should stand, and the results were fantastic.
Speaker 4.
I hadn't had any photography lessons. I'd just been playing around with all the equipment I'd bought, not always successfully. So it was useful to get guidance from the tutor on what all the camera settings were for. They'd been a bit of a mystery up until then. That really improved my photos. That and some tips I got online after the course ended about checking what else was in the distance in case it spoiled the picture.
Speaker 5.
On joining the course, I realised I already knew quite a lot, like not taking pictures of your family standing in front of the dustbins, for example. But I've been nervous about investing in stuff for photography, such as a high-quality printer. The tutor encouraged us to experiment with different ones, and I found the perfect model to get. Impossible without the tutor's help. Anyway, I'm now going to try taking photos around my town, something I'll need to learn how to do.
Speaker 6.
Before the course, I'd been experimenting with things like whether to always have the person I was photographing in the centre of my pictures. And although I don't normally bother buying extra bits and pieces, I had bought a lamp specially for photography to brighten my pictures and create shadows, but I wasn't sure how to achieve those effects. The tutor showed me several methods, and now I have a much better idea of what I'm doing. I'm very satisfied.
Now you will hear the 6 speakers again. Speaker 1.
The camera I'd bought was expensive, but even though I'd figured out how it worked, I was still disappointed with my photos. The course tutor mentioned that although I was good at photographing things like trees in the park, I'd often forget what was behind them, usually something that ruined the shot. So that's been important to remember. Anyway, at least I've always managed to get the lighting right, unlike my brother, who takes photos facing into the sun.
Speaker 2.
I wasn't sure about doing a course, but I've definitely learned a lot from the tutor, such as how to get pictures of things like birds flying past, which I've always been really into. So the course was worth it. I might have a change now, though, and try taking pictures of all the festivals and street parties that take place around my city. It's not something I really know how to do, but let's see.
Speaker 3.
I'd already taught myself how to operate my camera and had bought lots of extra kit, but I needed expert advice. I'd been experimenting with different lights and stuff, but I still wasn't happy with my photos somehow. Anyway, thanks to the tutor, I realised that I was just trying to include too much in them. My whole family on holiday, for example. I'd learned to plan where each family member should stand, and the results were fantastic.
Speaker 4.
I hadn't had any photography lessons. I'd just been playing around with all the equipment I'd bought, not always successfully. So it was useful to get guidance from the tutor on what all the camera settings were for. They'd been a bit of a mystery up until then. That really improved my photos. That and some tips I got online after the course ended about checking what else was in the distance in case it spoiled the picture.
Speaker 5.
On joining the course, I realised I already knew quite a lot, like not taking pictures of your family standing in front of the dustbins, for example. But I've been nervous about investing in stuff for photography, such as a high-quality printer. The tutor encouraged us to experiment with different ones, and I found the perfect model to get. Impossible without the tutor's help. Anyway, I'm now going to try taking photos around my town. Something I'll need to learn how to do.
Speaker 6.
Before the course, I'd been experimenting with things like whether to always have the person I was photographing in the centre of my pictures. And although I don't normally bother buying extra bits and pieces, I had bought a lamp specially for photography to brighten my pictures and create shadows, but I wasn't sure how to achieve those effects. The tutor showed me several methods, and now I have a much better idea of what I'm doing. I'm very satisfied.
That is the end of exercise 4. Now turn to exercise 5. Exercise 5. You will hear an interview with a student, Tom Fenwick, who recently helped out on a local archaeology project, searching a site for historical evidence. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice. Now look at questions 33 to 40.
I'm with Tom Fenwick, who recently took part in a local history project where people explore a site, digging into the ground for evidence of inhabitants from the past. Tom, how did you hear about the project?
Well, it was taking place not far from where I live, but because initially the site was only open to experts, I wasn't aware something was going on there. Anyway, a few months later, I spotted an advert on a local news website asking for volunteers to go and help. Then I discovered my college lecturer had also signed up, so at least I'd know someone there.
But what made you want to join?
I'd been wondering about doing a degree course in history, although not necessarily ancient history. I wasn't sure about tackling loads of books about that. But in the meantime, the project seemed a good way of getting practical experience of history in the fresh air. I wrote to the project leader and was accepted.
Tell us about your first day at the site.
I'd worked out before I arrived that it wouldn't be easy or relaxing. Once I was there, though, it was clear I knew a lot more than I expected. You know, about the different periods in history when people were living in the area. Anyway, I spent the first day digging, which was tiring, but fine. But my main concern then was that I'd accidentally break something valuable hidden under the soil. That didn't happen, luckily.
What did you discover about the site you were working on?
It seemed people had lived in a large village there for hundreds of years, up until relatively recently. We'd discovered objects from many different periods, but then there was an unexpected gap. Clearly all the villagers had suddenly left, before slowly returning. There could be many reasons for this, the investigation still continuing. But there was evidence of houses, farms, craftsmen's workshops. It was a reasonably sized community, which we think sold a few goods to nearby villages.
And you found an ancient pot?
Yes, buried under the soil. I was thrilled. And it had been beautifully decorated, which I thought was incredible. I wondered if it was for cooking or for storing something, so I hoped the pot might get sent to professors at the local university. But apparently it wasn't important enough for that.
And then you were asked to look for metal objects on the site, using a special machine?
Yes, what's called a metal detector, a kind of long stick that you basically move over the ground. If you hear a sound in your headphones, That could mean there's something metal under the ground. So I was keen to uncover something significant with it. But it doesn't always work. Even if you do hear a sound, it won't necessarily mean there's anything there. Not that I minded, it was still fascinating. In fact, I was so into it, I even bought myself a device.
And then later you found a beautiful necklace, didn't you?
Yeah, it was centuries old. The project leader thought it might have been owned by one family, then given to the children by their parents over the centuries. Apparently, a few similar ones have been found in the area, and it's thought that they came from another country. Anyway, the one I found was really lovely.
So how do you feel now you've left the project?
It was an amazing experience. Although I don't know whether I made a difference, as there's still plenty of work left to do. I'm certainly hoping to go back shortly to carry on where I left off. And next year, there might be some important people coming to the site, so who knows where that might lead.
Well, good luck.
Now you will hear the interview again.
I'm with Tom Fenwick, who recently took part in a local history project where people explore a site, digging into the ground for evidence of inhabitants from the past. Tom, how did you hear about the project?
Well, it was taking place not far from where I live, but because initially the site was only open to experts, I wasn't aware something was going on there. Anyway, a few months later, I spotted an advert on a local news website asking for volunteers to go and help. Then I discovered my college lecturer had also signed up, so at least I'd know someone there.
But what made you want to join?
I'd been wondering about doing a degree course in history, although not necessarily ancient history. I wasn't sure about tackling loads of books about that. But in the meantime, the project seemed a good way of getting practical experience of history in the fresh air. I wrote to the project leader and was accepted.
Tell us about your first day at the site.
I'd worked out before I arrived that it wouldn't be easy or relaxing. Once I was there, though, it was clear I knew a lot more than I expected. You know, about the different periods in history when people were living in the area. Anyway, I spent the first day digging, which was tiring, but fine. But my main concern then was that I'd accidentally break something valuable hidden under the soil. That didn't happen, luckily.
What did you discover about the site you were working on?
It seemed people had lived in a large village there for hundreds of years, up until relatively recently. We'd discovered objects from many different periods, but then there was an unexpected gap. Clearly all the villagers had suddenly left, before slowly returning. There could be many reasons for this, the investigation still continuing. But there was evidence of houses, farms, craftsmen's workshops. It was a reasonably sized community, which we think sold a few goods to nearby villages.
And you found an ancient pot?
Yes, buried under the soil. I was thrilled. And it had been beautifully decorated, which I thought was incredible. I wondered if it was for cooking or for storing something, so I hoped the pot might get sent to professors at the local university. But apparently it wasn't important enough for that.
And then you were asked to look for metal objects on the site, using a special machine?
Yes, what's called a metal detector, a kind of long stick that you basically move over the ground. If you hear a sound in your headphones, that could mean there's something metal under the ground. So I was keen to uncover something significant with it. But it doesn't always work. Even if you do hear a sound, it won't necessarily mean there's anything there. Not that I minded, it was still fascinating. In fact, I was so into it, I even bought myself a device.
And then later you found a beautiful necklace, didn't you?
Yeah, it was centuries old. The project leader thought it might have been owned by one family, then given to the children by their parents over the centuries. Apparently, a few similar ones have been found in the area, and it's thought that they came from another country. Anyway, the one I found was really lovely.
So how do you feel now you've left the project?
It was an amazing experience. Although I don't know whether I made a difference, as there's still plenty of work left to do. I'm certainly hoping to go back shortly to carry on where I left off. And next year, there might be some important people coming to the site, so who knows where that might lead.
Well, good luck.
That is the end of exercise 5. You now have 6 minutes to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. I will remind you when there is 1 minute left. You have one more minute left. That is the end of the examination.